Vardian, get in. Close the door.
Sure. Hey, Dylan. You've been busy up here.
Yeah, this is what work looks like. I've been trying to figure out a solution on the monster ecology problem. I need a couple of sigils in the right spots.
Dylan, are you sure about this?
I wasn't entirely convinced magic existed until last week, Aram. I'm not certain about anything.
I assume this is one of those things you weren't quite sure about?
I mean, I could probably get better materials for this if we had more funding.
Well, for $2 a month, supporters on patreon.com/killeverymonster get access to ad-free episodes as they are released. For $5, you'll get those ad-free episodes early, along with audio DM notes featuring Dylan and I recapping what went into producing each one.
For $10 a month, you'll get audio and video DM's notes, along with extended cutting room floor content that didn't quite make it into the main episode.
We also have a $25 investor level and a $50 producer level. Support at these tiers ensures we can continue to produce Kill Every Monster and allows us to hire more talent from the community. Both levels also get a personalized shout-out at the end of every episode, and producers get a welcome pack of each official Dead Ghost and Kill Every Monster pin we've got left in stock.
The $2, $5, and $10 Patreon tiers are available with 7-day trials for new subscribers, so head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster and check out everything we have to offer at no cost to you.
Want a free way to help the show? Give us a review. Written reviews are amazing, but even clicking 5 stars is a huge boost. Podcast reviews are the best way we have to get the show in front of new listeners. You can leave reviews for Kill Every Monster on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcast Addict.
Find all the ways you can support the show and leave us a review at patreon.com/killeverymonster.
My name is Aram, and my pronouns are he, him. I'm the producer of the Dungeons & Dragons podcast, God's Fall.
My name's Dylan. My pronouns are he, they, and I'm a physicist from Canada.
Welcome to Kill Every Monster. This week on Kill Every Monster, we are featuring the Kuo-Toa.
The Monster Manual describes Kuo-Toa as fish-like humanoids that once inhabited the shores and islands of the surface world. Long ago, humans and their ilk drove the Kuo-Toa underground, where they dwell in everlasting night. The Kuo-Toa can no longer abide daylight.
We are joined by Jeremy Cobb. Jeremy is an actor, writer, and podcast host who you may know as the co-host and resident GM of the show Three Black Halflings. In addition to 3BH, Jeremy has appeared on Not Another D&D Podcast, Dicebreaker, Transplanter, and many more. He recently started a streaming channel twitch.tv/casualquestlive in which he plays classic games for the first time, guided by his best friend Tay. You can find him on Twitter and Blue Sky at JeremyCobb1 and on Instagram at TheCobbMeister. Welcome to the show, Jeremy.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here. This is going to be great.
Jeremy, what are the Kuo-Toa?
So the Kuo-Toa, I'm intrigued by the fact that the Monster Manual does not say anything about their origins besides the fact that they had an empire and were forced underground. Because I would argue that the fact that they used to live on the surface and were forced underground is probably the least important part of their backstory pertaining to how they are normally portrayed now. The most important part of their backstory is when they were forced underground, they encountered the Mind Flayers, as well as apparently other mind-altering races, but mainly the Mind Flayers.
Everything in the Underdark is psychic.
They suffered the same fate as the Dwargar, as the Gith, as many, many other groups of people.
Sferf Neblin.
Yes, exactly. And they were psychically altered and enslaved and turned into weird mutant versions of themselves. And unfortunately, they took it a little worse than most of the other ones did. And at this point, most of them, or at least a large percentage of them, are considered insane. And they have gained the power to summon things into reality based on belief. And this includes the ability to create gods. If enough of them believe in a god at once, that god will become real in some shape or form. That, to me, is probably the most interesting part of the Kuwatoa, the fact that they are literally able to form new gods, and do, apparently, on a pretty regular basis.
These are a class of monster that I have been referring to as the wet goblins.
I know, it's so upsetting every time.
So, obviously, lore-wise, they have their own shtick. Except they don't, because it's also the Dwager shit and the Svirfneblin and everything that's ever touched a Mind Flayer has the same backstory. Mind Flayers enslaved them. Now they're either psionic or nuts.
Oh, they're broken because of their enslavement. That just...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's no way to fix that. That is just awful.
I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with having a group of people who in their backstory have some form of oppression or exploitation that has left a scar, especially if we're playing in a magical world where you can leave some sort of magical scar. Sure. But it is a weird thing that there is like the Gith, which is technically the Gith Yankee and the Gith Zerai, plus the Dwergar, plus I think the Drow to an extent, plus the Svirfneblin, plus the Darrow, which are basically just Dwergar who never escaped, or you could call them perhaps Hairy Kuwatoa, and now the Kuwatoa.
As an Armenian, the idea of a people who were really scarred by a terrible oppressor is an interesting tale. But then I want to hear about the diaspora and about how they have rebuilt their lives and pulled themselves together, or at the very least are dealing with the impact of this, with just making them shattered and giving them no path to healing. It doesn't feel very good.
Aram, you've just touched on what probably my biggest complaint about the game Baldur's Gate 3 is,
yeah,
and a lot of the handling of race and racism in Dungeons & Dragons in general. So Baldur's Gate 3, in which the Kuwatoa do appear, a couple of times, actually.
Our blood to fill your oceans, O blessed Boal. Our bones to build your temple in the deep.
A wave of pure devotion washes over you. And with every surge, you feel a presence grow in response.
There's a lot of in-game racism. People are being racist against tieflings, they're being racist against drow, they're being racist against gith.
Keep back, flat face! I know how to handle myself.
Auntie Ethel's vicious mockeries.
Bow your head, slave. You remember how, don't you?
She comes off like Pierce Hawthorne's dad from Community, where she has intensely studied every group of people so that she can say the most offensive thing possible to them.
I wonder which parent regrets you more, half-breed.
The problem with all of that, aside from the fact that some people just don't enjoy having that in their fantasy, I would say the biggest problem is that we never see the people responding to it. We never see the tieflings saying, oh, everybody hates us? Okay, well, there's a tiefling liberation movement. And some of us are like, hey, we don't like the fact that we're being treated that way. We have, say, an organization that exists in Baldur's Gate that helps, you know, some of the tiefling refugees. There's perhaps throughout the Sword Coast some sort of, you know what I mean? We don't see any tiefling leaders. Like, even if it's they take a more aggressive tact and some of the tieflings are like, hey, they hate us, let's take these people down then. We don't even see that. They're not given any agency. They're just being mistreated. The same is true of the Kuwatoa and all those other races, like we mentioned. You never see the way that they've moved on.
And the goblins.
Yes, and the goblins. The goblins are just evil.
One of the worst parts of this is the fact that several fantasy races are just proxies for real world races. When you say to the dwarf, bet you'd trade your friends for a trinket or two, gold eater.
Yeah.
Like, this is actively, like, real racist.
Yeah, like, fully racist.
It's just the world making sure that you understand that racism is common everywhere, and they just drill it home over and over and over again for no reason.
But not a problem. Common, but not a problem.
Common, but not an issue. Exactly.
I actually spoke to a friend of mine who's European, and they pointed out something that I hadn't really considered, because I'm like, okay, the Larian's a Belgian studio. I know that having been to a lot of European countries and spent a lot of time in Europe, I spent like a semester in the Czech Republic. I lived in the UK for 8 years, which is not technically a part of Europe now, but it was when I went there. And also I've been going to the UK since I was a baby. I'm a dual citizen, and have visited a lot of different countries United Kingdom, but also all around continental Europe. And in general, there seems to be an ignorance towards the racial component of a lot of discriminatory attitudes and practices, to the point that people will like, and this is what my friend pointed out, normally, and this is a big theme of the game, the big thing is more like xenophobia. Fear of refugees. And that's a big thing in the game is, oh, the tieflings are not just tieflings, they're refugee tieflings. And the thing that gets criticized in the game, the thing that the game criticizes is the mistreatment of the tieflings based on the fact that they're refugees. There's never an opportunity to be like, hey, could we stop being just racist to them as well? It's always, hey, could we let the refugees into the city? And I think that's where the dictator comes to power, saying, well, we have this army and all these refugees trying to come in, which is absolutely a huge problem in Europe. But I think they really fail to bring in the racial component as well, which is a huge part, especially the early game, just really aggressively so. Thankfully, they sort of ease off in Act Two, but like, my lord, Act One is ridiculous.
There's even that one part, there's all the racism in the grove between the tieflings. And there's all that racism happening. And then if you walk in as a drow, the guy just casually like, hey, you're really brave.
Mm-hmm.
For being just alive.
Mm-hmm.
For no reason. I'll tell all the others not to actively hate you. Go on and shop. Why?
If I were to ask anybody, and I have asked several people I know who are D&D people, they've only seen Kuotoa in the Monster Manual because they're flipping through. You don't necessarily read the lore. And the universal assumption is this is some Innsmouth bullshit.
Yes.
The fish guys are clearly some sort of Lovecraft reference. They worship a great old one. They're creepy little bastards because...
That was my assumption.
And I think this assumption is correct. The name Kuotoa, as well as some of the other names, we mentioned that they sound almost like silly or like they're making fun of it. So I did a little bit of research in the Lovecraft short story, which is The Shadow Over Innsmouth, that we're referencing here, in which a group of people are mating with a strange group of fish people called the Deep Ones. And obviously Lovecraft has a huge, hangs over everything to do with aberrations in D&D, as well as, large amounts of other part of fiction. The group of people who were, I think originally had mated with the Deep Ones, or at least had originally found them, are a real group of people. They're called, I don't know if it's pronounced Kanak, but I think it might be Kanak or Kanak, who live on New Caledonia, which is a real island, or real, collection of islands in the Pacific. And then I was like, oh, that's interesting, Pacific Islanders. And then I was like, hey, wait a minute, what other series have I heard of? Where else have I heard the name Toa? And then I was thinking like, oh, Bionicle. Oh, you mean the thing that pulls from tons of Polynesian and Pacific cultures like Mata Nui and different names like that. And then it's all started to kind of slip into place where it's like, oh, we have a group of island people who are worshiping a strange fish god. They're clearly a reference to the same kind of groups of people from Lovecraft the Shadow Over Innsmouth is also one of the most racist Lovecraft stories, where it's very blatantly anti-miscegenation. Do I think the people who came up with the Kuotoa were intentionally trying to mock those cultures? Probably a little, but not like to the point where they were like, let's go in deep. I think it was like the names they come up with sound silly and let's just run with that and come up with a bunch of really silly sounding names for stuff and have just a bunch of goofy, weird fish people.
Racist, but goofy racist. Yeah.
I'm never going to advocate for doing this, but people do it when they're researching for games. If you look at the Forgotten Realms lore for Kuotoa, it very immediately and very transparently morphs from this has inspiration in Lovecraft and therefore has inspiration in racism, and that sort of cascades downward to this is just strictly anti-Indigenous. There is a whole lot of statements of like, oh, they worship silly fake gods. They can't worship the real ones. They come up with little joke gods and they just believe hard enough that they're real. They're constantly described as like being ugly and smelly and slimy, and they can't wear real clothes. So they wear all of this sort of primitive leather straps and shells all over themselves, and just compounding again and again on top of this baseline uncomfortable territory, they just stack up layers of bigotry. There are lots of species and races in D&D that invoke real-world racisms in unfortunate ways. But this is the one where it's like, if you put your players in a territory where you're like, okay, and now here's the evil Kuotoa, you're just doing a settler colonialism. That's every plot involving the Kuotoa based on what you're told about them.
And that's kind of in the best case. In the worst case, you're exterminating mentally damaged survivors. That doesn't feel great.
Or you become their god, which is another one of those things. It's like, when we start talking about, oh, these primitive people can't even recognize, which is a spoiler. I mean, we've already been spoiling Baldur's Gate all over the place. One of the two times that you can encounter the Kuotoa, you can encounter them worshiping essentially a mortal who they got confused for the god Baal. But they're calling him Boal because they can't say it right. That's another thing where we're talking about like weird stereotypes. They can't pronounce our words correctly. But you can convince them that you are a god and they will start worshiping you instead. That's a whole thing you can do. Your options are either, I think, join with the worship of Boal and become like his disciples and gain power from him through the Kuotoa to kill him and replace him as their deity, or to just kill everyone there, including all of the Kuotoa who were there. And in contrast to most other groups, basically none of the Kuotoa, except for, I think one has unique dialogue, the rest of them all say the exact same things, and they all just go, Boal! Boal! Or whatever new god you are named. They don't really get dialogue. They are depicted as being extreme simpletons, weird and insane, essentially, which...
It doesn't line up either. So I'm looking at their stats and they have an intelligence of 11.
They're people smarts.
They're supposed to be at least average.
Yeah, at least average. They just have average staff. They're a little bit slow on charisma. And, you know, if you're a walking hagfish, I kind of understand that. But otherwise, they just have normal stats.
If you strip out most of the lore, if you just take like the Cole's Notes sort of important things that people are going to grab, you can construct something that is very, very interesting. Like, the idea that here is a race of people who can believe so hard that they bring things into existence. That makes the Kuotoa one of the most dangerous people on the planet. Just immediately. They can build a god. That becomes the sort of thing like, yeah, this will still lead you into some potentially uncomfortable territory if you're using, like, and then someone manipulates them to use this belief. But like, if you want to strengthen a minor outsider into deific territory and you hijack a Kuotoa cult to do it, a devil could elevate themselves to like very, very high power. And that's now interesting, as opposed to going like, no, they're just silly. They're just silly and they don't know what they're doing.
Can anyone stop the Tarrasq? No, but the Kuotoa can, because they can make a god.
Or even looking at things from the Kuotoa's perspective, like what do they want aside from just existing? I've never seen an indication that the Kuotoa were ever a playable race. They don't seem like they would have been, to be honest, because they're mostly treated in the lore like half monster, half like children, essentially, which again, the idea of a society of people who are depicted as being childlike is very reminiscent of a lot of racial stereotypes and attitudes going back hundreds of years. But I think the idea of a group of Kuotoa who are like the Kuotoa being like, oh, if we can dream it, we can make it, can be like, what happens if they build a whole civilization of like this massive, I mean, like they used to have an empire. It's
I'm reminded of that Sandman short story where they the cats, where they're like, oh, the cats used to be dominant, and then one day all the humans dreamed that we were little. Well, if all the cats can dream that we're dominant again, then we'll reclaim. What happens if you have like a group of Kuo-To'o who are like, oh, hey, you know, we have this power to, if we believe in something, our belief makes things manifest. What if we were to make more? Like, what if we wanted to create a deity who would help us, like, we could raise islands, we can have our own land and territory, and, like, there's all sorts of different things they could do.
The Kuo-To'o, specifically in the Monster Manual, it basically says, after they were broken by the Mind Flayers, they adopted a religious fervor, inventing gods to protect them against threats. If you are terrified of everyone finding you, forming tiny little island nations with sort of microscopic gods that only protect you from other people, they're just going to be isolationists. They're going to be entirely happy living on their own away from everybody else with a small god that just stops people from showing up.
It's like Wonder Woman Island with a little Cthulhu guarding it.
Yeah.
It's that mascara for fish people.
Or like Atlantis.
Why can't it just be Atlantis?
Yeah.
Why can't this just be a race of people that ran into like a deep, deep, dark one?
I think you've got the thing backwards, because one of the things we often do is, as has been mentioned, you know, we have the idea of the dark old one and there's these evil things. You know, even like the old sort of Christian idea of, oh no, all of these savages are worshiping demons that convinced them they were gods. Run it in the other direction.
Right.
You have a coastal town that's worshiping an old one and trying to bring about an apocalypse. And what they're trying to do is they found out about the fish people god, and now they're adopting it. They're perverting it. They're making it the demon.
Oh, okay.
This is something that is capable of a huge amount of power to our outside perspective, because it stops the entire outside world from finding the fish people. It just protects them. But really all that god is doing is making sure ships kind of go wide.
Right, just kind of like adding a bit of fog.
And now you're out there murdering people to try to feed power into this god so that it'll grant you power.
They can have their own society that's completely self-sustaining, and their god is so powerful that other... Yeah, I even like the idea of, what about trans-dimensional Kuo-To'o, where they were like, hey, we're just done. We are so isolationist. We want to leave this plane. And they get their own plane. They dream a plane into being with their own god ecology. They get yoinked out of this... Like, a bunch of them get yoinked out of this dimension, and it's like one of those things... It almost fits the Lovecraft better, where it's like a weird... mysterious fish people dimension where you might get like premonitions because their belief is so powerful that like it travels into other people's subconsciousnesses at some points.
Depending on how close you get, like a Bermuda Triangle kind of effect.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You can erase the entire Mind Flayer background by saying that at one point they were like the society of Atlantis, and they grew too powerful and too corrupt. And the god they dreamt into being was this supposedly deep horror, but they're the ones that created it. It shattered them, shattered their society, made all of them forget they were the ones responsible for it. And now the cycle is starting up again. You can keep it completely contained.
Are the Kuo-To'o a monster?
And I think we've come to the conclusion that as presented as a race in the book, if that's what they're going to be, then no. Emotionally damaged survivors are not monsters. But are there some ways we can make the Kuo-To'o a monster?
What if we leaned more into the monster thing and said, rather than the Kuo-To'o being a specific race of people, what if maybe... We could even use that past background of the god that was created, but then was warped and, you know, through people's greed and became basically like a Cthulhu type being that, I mean, in Lovecraftian lore, Cthulhu will call people to him. And of course, at the end of The Shadow Over Innsmouth, the protagonist starts to undergo the transformation into a deep one. What if instead of having the Kuo-To'o be a quote unquote race, they are actually just a group of mutated people of a variety of races? It's a category of monster that is like Cthulhu or whatever Blibdul poop, if we want to stick with that, is like calling people to them to as their worshippers and use it and like starts to mutate people, sort of like a warlock pact gone horribly wrong. In exchange for my power, you now transform into a fish and are you are now subject to me.
You go through this hyper evolution where everyone just bends toward Crab.
There is only one Kuotoa god. The Kuotoa have snapped. They believe there are multiple gods, and it's all just facets of one thing that is pulling them all in, that is trying to make them perfect. And the only way we can do that is if you're not dealing with those other gods and their plans. The only reason this is allowed to happen is because it's one island out in the middle of nowhere. But the moment a guy who just everybody assumes is like, say, a Triton or something, because it looks like an elf, but it's a little scaly. The moment he comes out and starts proselytizing, suddenly a bunch of standard terrestrial gods are like, okay, so we gotta deal with that.
Yeah.
Smite him. Smite him twice.
In the Kuotoa lore, if one of them goes mad, then that madness is contagious and can spread to other Kuotoa. What if instead of it spreading to other Kuotoa, it creates more Kuotoa? As soon as one person gets infected, now this dark god has a foothold, and it's going to start, that person is like a conduit, and more people are going to start undergoing the transformation, so that they are, in fact, not people. They are just straight up monsters.
The idea that one person has a bit of a mental break and that their mental illness is infectious, it feels icky. But the moment you give them that sort of hive mind thing, it becomes as simple as when one of them has a break that is strong enough to fundamentally alter the way they view the world, they believe it, which alters their god, which alters the truth of their reality, which cascades back into everyone that believes in the god, and suddenly it is splashing out around them.
The one thing I wouldn't change with the Kuotoa are the mechanics, because the mechanics for these things are great. They're fun. They're interesting. They do different things than you expect. I even like the sticky shield gimmick where you hit them and you can't get the weapon off. That's all fun.
The slime, I feel like if it depends on which way we want to go with it. If we're doing more monstery, then I think absolutely keep the more gross aspects. But if we're going more like their people, I like the idea that this is slime that they've like learned to cultivate. Like maybe there's a sea creature that they've tamed, like sea cucumbers, that they've been farming these sea cucumbers that can produce this slime. And so they coat their stuff with it because it's effective in warfare. Like I like those ideas as well. I would also agree. Sticky shield, I think, is really cool. I think I'd get rid of sunlight sensitivity. In general, I just think sunlight sensitivity doesn't make much sense unless you intend for this group of people to just not really know about the surface. Because if they're a full-blown civilization and they have dealings with surface dwellers, they would have invented some version of sunglasses.
They also wouldn't look like this. They'd look like cave fish. This looks like a fish. This is just a fish that should be swimming in the ocean.
In terms of the sticky shield, the only thing I would change there is I would just make it a cultivated thing in terms of like, imagine if you managed to breed a crab so big that when you took off the main pincer, you could wear it like a shield. And then it just becomes almost a parrying effect of I get you in the shield and I can just get it to grab your weapon. Because it doesn't make sense to me that they have two slime-based abilities. They have a sticky shield, but they also have a slippery, like, anti-grapple maneuver. You have one type of slime, pick it.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that.
Don't pull this bullshit with me.
Yeah, I agree. Keep the slime. Either they are secreting it themselves, or it's something they can, like, throw on themselves, because they just carry the slime and realize that, like, oh, these people will sometimes try and trap us.
Yeah.
So this will help us to zoop! Escape very quickly.
If they had different bottles ready.
Yeah.
Yeah, if they were just like, if they had like a little bandolier of different slime types that they've cultivated.
Weird little Kuotoa goop alchemists.
Yeah.
That's fun.
I love the idea of the crab shield, and that leads me to, what about like crustacean armor in general?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like what if we take a lobster shell, covering their backs or something? I think that could be pretty darn cool.
I don't know that they even strictly need armor, because they are slimy and scaly, and that is how fish defend themselves. Like, the entire point is that they're wet and a little bit slimy, so when you try to bite them, you can't get a strong point of contact, and it just slips off of them. Scales are armor. to the point where we have a type of armor that tries to emulate them. I don't know that we even need to put them in fucking lobster armor. We could just let them be, like, this is one of the cases where I think the natural armor thing makes a lot of sense. These are just things where you can't really stab a Kuotoa. Your sword will slip off and it'll skid along the scales. Like, you have to get good purchase. I would maybe argue, like, just at level 5, they get that Divine Intervention Cleric ability. It never improves past, like, a 1% chance. But you're a Kuotoa. If you believe real hard, once a session, you can try.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you accidentally did a god.
Any Kuotoa at any time could make something amazing just by thinking
That's
about
really
it.
Funny. Yeah. I like that.
I really like the idea of them being able to talk to each other. I also like the idea of stealing the Cylon ability from Battlestar Galactica so they can simply envision themselves in any background or environment they want to, and they can share this vision together so they could all be somewhere fantastical that only they can see. Everyone else is just, there's a couple fish people hanging out on rocks.
Mechanically, we're talking basically the great old one warlock, like 30-foot telepathy, right?
Yeah. I think it would be something like that.
Because that is a lovely idea, Aram, and that's a great way to fluff it. But also, if we're going to suggest things to do with a playable race, it has to be mechanical.
Yes, agreed. Fair enough.
I would say some sort of telepathy would be great.
You give them telepathy, natural armor, and then at level 5, a 1% chance divine intervention once a session.
Swim speed, breathe underwater. I would like some illusory type, like something, even if it's pretty basic.
I'm going to push back on that one for a simple reason, which is that they have that ability where they can see invisible things and sort of they can see through illusions. Let's assume that we're working with something where the Kuotoa at baseline are insular. Why would you develop a thing like illusions around a people that can specifically see through illusions?
Yeah, that's fair. That was the spell I was thinking of. Was it see invisibility?
Yeah.
I think see invisibility and then having advantage on seeing through illusions, like on whether that's investigation or any saving throw or check to see through an illusion.
Aram, what's going on? Why is all of our stuff in boxes?
Good news, Dylan! Dead Ghost Productions is moving.
What do you mean, moving?
We're separating our patrons and launching a new Dead Ghost page to provide our listeners with more content and a clean RSS feed for all their podcasts. Stacy is helping us out with the heavy stuff.
She's a bit clumsy.
Okay. So that makes sense, sort of. What about the people who have already subscribed?
I've got it handled. Everyone who is currently subscribed to our Dead Ghost Productions level or our combined feeds level will get a free month once we split the feeds on June 1st. If you're signed up for a yearly subscription, you'll get just as many free months on our new Dead Ghost feed as you currently have left on that subscription.
Okay, so what do people have to do in order to make the switch?
It's easy. Everyone will get a link to activate their free subscription sent directly to their email. They just need to follow that link to the new Dead Ghost patron and they'll be all set. The changes won't start until June 1st, and if anyone has questions about it, they can email us at killeverymonster@gmail.com or deadghostproductions@gmail.com. They can also message us directly in Patreon.
Okay. This better not interfere with my experiments, Vardian.
Don't worry, Dylan. I've told Stacy to stay clear of your laboratory. How do we safely power down the nuclear generator again?
Aram, what was that?
Good news. I found a dragon.
No, you didn't. Dragons aren't real, Aram.
Oh, they are quite real, Dylan. And very clumsy.
All right, I'll play. Why did you bring a dragon here?
What better way to promote Kill Every Monster than with an actual dragon? We may need to pump up the Patreon just a little.
For $2 a month, supporters on patreon.com/killeverymonster get access to ad-free episodes as they're released. For $5, you'll get them early along with audio DMs notes featuring Aram and I discussing how we made each episode.
For $10 a month, you'll get audio and video DMs notes along with extended cutting room floor content that didn't quite make it into the main episode.
We also have a $25 investor level and a $50 producer level. Support at these tiers ensures we can continue to produce Kill Every Monster and allows us to hire more talent from the community. Both levels get a personalized shout-out at the end of every episode, and producers get a welcome pack of each official Dead Ghost and Kill Every Monster pin we have left in stock.
The $2, $5, and $10 patron tiers are available with a 7-day free trial for new subscribers. So head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster and check out everything we have to offer at no cost to you.
Want another free way to help the show? Give us a review. Written reviews are amazing, but even clicking 5 stars is a huge boost. Podcast reviews are the best way we have to get the show in front of new listeners. You can leave reviews for Kill Every Monster on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcast Addict.
Find all the ways you can support the show and leave us a review at patreon.com/killeverymonster.
Aram, tell me a little bit about who your character is.
Nivis is a Triton and a druid, and kind of a shepherd of the sea. Spends their days kind of going around solving sea problems and talking to their sea friends.
Amin warawa wasanle.
Honestly, it feels very Silver Age Aquaman, you know?
Yes.
Go around, I talk to the fish are happy, I help out the seahorses.
Yeah!
You know, one of their babies ran away, I helped to get back home.
Right, he's literally doing his job as king of the ocean, as opposed to abandoning them every time to go hang out with his land friends. Exactly.
Come on, Aquaman, be responsible.
Get it together, Arthur.
That's what everybody came to this D&D podcast to hear about.
The ocean is 3 times as large as all the land stuff.
There's more things in there.
And you're just leaving it.
Yeah.
Someone has to handle that.
It isn't. It's 3 times the area. It also has a second dimension, like a third dimension to it. Land is pretty, like, just, it's a surface. You don't get much taller. Sea goes very, very deep. Anyway, that's not important. We're not going to do this.
Well, it is very important to Nivis.
It's very important to Nivis. Which is where issues start to come up. Your sort of outpost town, your home, is not too far off of the coast. And there is a fishing village nearby. Now, one of the things you notice swimming around, righting all the wrongs of the sea, getting cats out of wet trees, is about 3-4 weeks ago, after a couple months of slowing, the fishing boats have stopped. No one is fishing anymore. And coinciding with that, there are dreams. These dreams are very, very hard to describe because, honestly, they amount to things that are not possible. Oftentimes, you're dreaming of relics, ancient artifacts that have shapes that you could not construct. Things that just straight up don't make sense. Things like a winged spear that, when perceived from a proper angle, seems to be itself a full angel with a sword, but is still wielded by a person, even though sometimes when you're seeing it from the right angle, it's very much a dude holding a dude. And these have been propagating until everyone, including yourself, have had at least one.
That was going to be my first question. Have I been having these dreams?
Yes.
Anything particular about mine?
Nothing in particular about yours. They, honestly, this is a fairly uniform occurrence. This is common to basically anything that is capable of dreaming in the sea. Now, where things became dangerous, they were always concerning, but there was a point where it transitioned into something needs to be done, is on the outskirts, near the floor of the ocean, you were looking into, essentially, an issue with toxicity. There were things that were getting poisoned, basically. And you go down and you found, basically following a smell, a heavy deposit of, like, just something leaching out, sort of metal oxides that are toxic to fish. And at the bottom of this, you find a very bad spear. Like, it is poorly constructed. It's made partially out of, like, copper alloys and materials that don't quite make sense, and you're trying to piece together what in fuck is going on until you turn it slightly and there's just a shadow and you see an angel. And this is something you know from your dreams, and it suddenly clicks that this is not what you dreamt of, but an attempt. This is a replica built in three dimensions.
Why would I interpret this immediately as lesser than my dream?
Because in your dream, it was a perfect weapon. It was balanced. It had oddities. Like I said, the spears, the fact that this person could throw it and it would fly back. And it was weird artifacts of perception. Like I said, if you're seeing it from the right angle, if the light hits it right, it's a person. This is a bad spear, but it has the shapes. It has all of these echoes, things that, like I said, imagine being the sort of person who could design a car, who draws a fucking Ferrari or whatever the fancy cars are these days.
There are Ferraris, yes.
Yes, I don't know if the brands come and go, and like maybe they're not impressive anymore. I don't know what people are into.
It's a McLaren, we're with you, go ahead.
Now imagine you see a car that looks like a toddler drew it.
So it's a McLaren.
Like,
some people will get that joke. Don't worry.
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
My guy's a druid, very much about stories and lore. Paper doesn't really work great underwater, so we're a big story people. I'm going to think that the first thought Nivis would have would be like, oh, it must be the kind of thing where when you touch it, you can then see it for what it really is. This must be some sort of illusion to make it look like a shoddy spear. But when I reach out and grab it, and he will.
It is bad.
Oh.
No, this is, again, legitimately, this is a engineer, a designer, sat down and worked on blueprints for years and showed a perfect example to someone. And then a toddler was given a metal shop and told, make me the car. This is someone who saw it, thought it was perfect, tried to make it, and has no fucking talent.
This is like the lady that tried to restore that 13th century painting.
Yes, this is Potato Jesus.
Okay, so when I pick it up, does it have proper balance? Does
no.
it feel like a good one? Okay, no, it's just garbage.
No, it feels like someone tried to put an angel into a spear so that when you saw it from the right angle, it was also a man. Like, this is someone tried to build an impossible object.
All right, so when I pick it up, what happens to the angel?
Like I said, this is something where when you picked it up and when you looked at it, you hit, like, the right angle and just the silhouette of it, you could see what they were trying to do. They didn't do it by any fucking means.
Is there any divine energy coming off this thing? Nothing.
Nope, okay. None.
Okay.
This is a bad job. This is, again, like, I'm just telling you directly, this is someone who has perceived the same thing as you, but thought they could make it be real.
So either someone has seen into my dreams, or we're having the same dream. And with so many people being infected by dreams, I'm going to lean towards the latter. Something is making us all have the same dream.
That checks out.
I need to find whoever made this spear.
Now, you happen to know that much like paper doesn't work underwater, forges don't either.
Right.
Very hard to maintain because of the rust and no other reason. This is an artifact of the surface.
I'm assuming that this would have to have been made on land. So I have to go to land.
It has to have been made on land, yes. You know that there is supposed to be a village nearby, and you at least have the inkling that something odd is going on there, given that the fishing has stopped. So you at least have like a vague lead, a direction to walk in.
Yes.
Swim in.
Right. Okay. Then I will go on this quest. But first, because I am a responsible shepherd of the ocean, I will stop by my village, mm-hmm. tell them where I'm going and why I am going there.
All right.
So that should anything happen to me, they will know instead of just he disappeared one day.
We're going to say that your town is effectively, like I mentioned, sort of an outpost. Like, you're the border with land folk. So this is the sort of thing where everybody's like, okay, that makes sense. We should investigate. That's a good point. We're going to send somebody back into the capital and just get a vibe check on this ship.
In the meantime, I shall take the shape of whatever ocean-going animal, a dolphin.
You have a swim speed.
Yes, but I could also be a dolphin, which is a greater swim speed and has the benefit of being a dolphin, which is less suspicious. You have to wait to transform into the, you know, fish people, right? I'm going to shortcut that because I'm from the ocean and I get to.
A level 3 druid can turn into fish because he's from the ocean. That makes complete sense.
I am now a dolphin.
Yes. So you're a dolphin.
I'm so happy. Love being a dolphin.
Everybody loves being a dolphin. Being a dolphin is great. Dolphins are actually awful, but being a dolphin is pretty dope.
They're monsters.
Horrible creatures. We're not getting into it, though.
Some dolphins accost you on the way and are like, you want to do some drugs?
Not one R's.
There's just a little puffer fish that one of them offers you. Puff, puff, pass.
Right. I have to dodge the dolphin gangs.
The dolphins start snapping as they advance through the water. Slapping their fins against themselves.
After several hours, ignoring the duration of wild shape, I do not care. Don't tweet at me.
I took naps.
You took short rests and got your wild shapes back and don't...
I was in a rush. Just investigating.
Yeah, we're just seeing what's going on. You get up to the surface. And you see this little coastal, I'm going to say fishing village. Jeremy, tell me what this town looks like.
I think it's best to say that this is an overcast day. The sky looks lighter than it feels. It feels very gray outside, even if the sky is rather pale. And actually, the same is true of the town. I will say that you have gleaned enough from your time living in the depths. You've known other fish beings who've traveled to the surface. You've heard of this town. It is called Margrave Harbor.
Might even be one of those things where there have been problems here where, like, they got a dolphin and you had to go up and be like, hey, guys, look, I know they look like fish, but you're going to have to stop doing that.
There have been a number of issues where, like, you've had to free dolphins from nets, but then they get upset because you're cutting their nets. Margrave Harbor is composed of primarily very light wood, like pale sort of white wood. But that wood has taken on something of a rotted hue. Even if the wood itself is still intact and the town does not look like it's about to collapse, it gives the vibe of something that is rotting. The harbor is probably the largest individual structure in the town, as well as a number of quite large fishing vessels, all of which seem to be docked, and several of which appear to have been completely, or at least partly, dismantled. I think that would probably be the next most striking thing, is some of these large fishing galleons, you see that, like, there are whole sections missing from them, and not the sections that you would expect if they were to have hit, say, a rock, and, like, sections to have gotten scraped away. It looks like people tore off the rigging, tore down the mast, are tearing from, like, the top of the boat down.
There's even, to your limited understanding of boat construction, not even just unbuilt, because if you were desperate, if you needed wood from the ship, there are bits that are extraneous, or even just easily accessible. Things you could take down.
Railings, things like that. Maybe take down the mast.
These are being destroyed. They're being torn apart with no respect for the idea that it may need to sail again.
As I'm shifting back from a dolphin, then into a humanoid form, and I can see more than just blue and green because I'm no longer using my dolphin eyes, I will look to see if there's any people that I can see.
Please roll a perception check.
That is a 15 plus 5 is 20.
All right. With a dirty 20, you look in and you can see the harbor looks abandoned, but the in and amongst the town, as you look, you can see shapes in some of the windows. I don't know if y'all have glass on the seafloor, but you have at least seen crystalline structures, and probably glass has fallen to the seafloor before. So you're like, oh, okay. You see that you see these windows, and you can see dark shapes moving in and amongst them. On the streets, you'd see a number of posters. It was probably the next thing, because you don't really see very many people out and about, but you see a number of posters advertising for someone named Guerno.
Guerno.
Guerno is going to be performing. There's going to be some sort of a meeting. But there's a lot of these posters up and around this town. And this village probably looks like it could house a few hundred people. It's not a gigantic city, but it's not minuscule either.
This town doesn't have people moving around it. Like, there's a simple connection to be made of, like, there are posters everywhere. But part of the way posters work is there has to be foot traffic. This strikes you as motions. They're doing this because it's what you're supposed to do. The posters extend down to this half-dismantled harbor. There is no one here to see them. There are 100 people. If these posters have been up for more than a couple of days, everybody knows already. It is incoherent in action.
Something's off. Something's creepy about this town. The first thing I'm going to do is talk to a fish.
Yep.
So I'm going to find some shoreline thing, maybe a crab, maybe a hermit crab. I'm just going to find something that hangs out near the shore and strike up a conversation.
Give me either a survival or an animal handling. I'll take either.
That is going to be 8 plus 3 is 11.
You have to catch a hermit crab.
Okay.
This isn't a you find one and you use your druid magics and you have a lovely conversation. This isn't the squirrel comes up to you in the woods. This is you wind up scraped along your stomach because you had to dive to catch the little fucker before he got back under some wood.
No, we're not.
Look, hang on. And I put my hand over him and I take like a little white fish and I hand it to him like, here you go. Here's a little piece of fish.
The little kind of claw kind of comes out, grabs, comes back in.
There you go. Okay. Just a couple questions.
Part of speak with animals is a weird telepathy, right? Like, they can't speak. That's not how they work.
Right.
And you can feel the moment where this crab is debating, like,
hold on. Is this cave? And there's shower.
Just debates using your hands as its new home.
No. I will need my hands, my friend. However, I can help you find a new shell. But in the meantime, the people, and I'll point them towards the shore, the people, they spend a lot of time along the shore and in your waters.
Oh, no, they don't.
When did they stop?
He gives you a time in terms of tides. Some number of tides coming in and out.
That's cool.
Corresponds to, like, the full stop being about 3 weeks ago.
Okay.
Yeah, so done. Starting, 6 months ago.
I'm translating here. Assume it's in terms of tides when the crab says it.
A little over a month ago, I started dismantling the boats and taking them in and building something. I didn't see where it is. It's up the hill. That's too dry over there.
They need new shells again. So they take apart the wet shells, and they build shells up there. It's fine. And then eventually they just stopped coming back.
Did
tells you that, like, about a week ago, someone came down, and he describes it as putting one of the flimsy shells on top of the shells that they live on. And from the gestures you're getting, like, it's the posters. Someone came down and put up posters again long after people stopped coming here.
The last thing I'll ask this little hermit crab. By the way, what is hermit crab's name?
It doesn't have a name. It's a hermit crab.
Okay, so I'm going to call him Hermie. Hermie, did you see anyone making, carrying, and I'll describe the spear, anything like this?
They keep throwing those out.
They keep throwing them out?
They're not good at it, I guess.
Who isn't good at it? Are there multiple people making these?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Hermie, you have been very helpful.
Mm-hmm. So I got a shell now.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to druid craft you up a shell. I can do that, right?
Yeah. You basically, like, pull lime out of some of the stones, construct sort of a slightly larger shell. It is more smooth than it ought to be. And you, as the spell is sort of fading, you hear the little complaints of, like, oh.
We're not supposed to have, like, it's bigger.
And I'll help him into his new little shell, put Hermes down, and send him on his way.
He absolutely refuses your help in terms of, like, changing shells. Like, that's like buying your buddy a pair of pants and then being like, here, I'll help you with the button. Like, don't fucking do that.
Okay, I'll give him some room.
Yes.
But I'll hang around during the transition to make sure.
Still a little weird, but he lets it happen because he's a hermit crab and the fuck is he going to do?
I don't want to be the guy who, like, lets the mouse go. It runs.
Gets him eaten by a seagull.
Exactly. Right. That's exactly what I'm trying to avoid.
Yeah. No, I respect it.
Spear makers are definitely there. Can't hide who I am, so I am simply going to stride out of the water with my trident across my back and my hands up and to the sides, as I have seen mortals do. Sorry, as I have seen land dwellers do. They do this whole I am not armed thing, so I'm going to do that.
You know the, I guess it'd be the second song in Beauty and the Beast, bells going through the town square. Imagine that, add a lot of clouds, and take out every aspect of joy.
Look at this darkness.
This is what I deserve.
And as you stride into this town, you get, I think the only thing that feels familiar about it is the fleeting scent of fish. As if that smell has pervaded this town for so long that it couldn't fade even after 3 weeks plus of no fishing. And aside from that, though, it is utterly unfamiliar. I don't know that y'all really need paved roads where you come from. So the idea of having, like, cobblestone streets is what is going on here? But yes, there are a series of rocks that have been, like, apparently inserted into the ground that you're able to walk on. You can see all of these structures. You can see that there are more of these signs around, including, like, you can see some of them appear to be delineating what the building is. You can see words like tavern, words like tanners, different sounds, different words that probably don't mean a whole lot to you. But you can also see that there are a number of people, like, as you are walking, you can see faces appearing in windows and looking at you, like, directly at you. And, like, you can see people looking, they seem to be motioning for other people to come. And when one case, one person stands and stares, and then another person, a much smaller person, is raised into view, who also stares at you.
Oh, a child. As soon as I see the child, I think he would stop and he would turn and he would think about things he does know about land, which are not that many, but he has done his research. I would think that he would think of a butterfly. That's the thing he thinks would be most beautiful. Close his hands and use druid craft to create a tiny little sensory effect of a butterfly that would fly from his hands and dance in front of the window.
You see the little face, the child's face, filled with shock and wonder. And you see the adult's face sort of narrow and almost glare at you, setting the child down and coming out. And they're not, this is not the only person that comes out. Seeing you do this, multiple people start emerging from houses. And you, the person who first, the adult who had the child starts, now what exactly do you think you're doing?
Oh, hello, good sir. I apologize, I meant you no harm. I was simply trying to amuse the child with a simple trick, and I will call the butterfly back and have it disappear back into my hands.
You hear mutterings of sea witch, hag, arcanist, but said in a way that, like, borders on slur.
Why do you bring these deceptions, these lies here? Do you seek to bamboozle?
I merely meant to entertain a small child. I am from a different place. Obviously, there are different beliefs on what should be used here as far as magic, and I will cease from using them again. And my sincere apologies if I have offended.
Roll a persuasion check, because this crowd, you have attracted a rather frustrated crowd.
Okay, that is going to be a 7 plus nothing.
I think this is largely taken. Right? Because, like, the persuasion, they're not going to fucking kill you over a butterfly, right?
I hope not.
This check is over whether you're pulling them to your side or not.
Ah, yeah.
They're willing to accept that you're not going to do this again, but you can tell.
They don't like me.
Something about the way that you do magic is unacceptable. And now you are marked as the false caster.
Okay. Okay. Good enough. Won't do that.
Yeah.
The reason I am here, however, is I found, I believe, one of your spears.
Oh. And they sort of look around and say, you found, it starts to look a little embarrassed. You found one of the attempts.
Could you inform me of the purpose?
As you ask this question, another person walks up and says, don't worry, Nikolai. Attempts are necessary. Failed attempts. They're nothing to be ashamed of. We are moving towards glory.
All progress is of benefit to the whole.
Oh, these were prototypes, yes?
I don't know if prototypes is the word I would use. I would say, well, I don't know if this example will translate to you. For us, when we have children, they are born unable to walk, and it takes them months, in some cases close to a year, to learn how. And along the way, there are many times when they stand up and fall. It's part of the natural process.
One must tread before they can swim.
Another man comes up beside Nikolai, puts a hand on the shoulder, clearly friendly, comforting. A prototype implies refinement of design. The design is perfect. The construction is difficult, taxing.
How interesting.
Yes, that is what I mean. We are not testing the design. We are testing ourselves. And only when we are worthy will we have succeeded.
A crowd of just nods and murmurs of just general assent. When this kind of cascades through the town, you... Again, you're familiar enough with the way cities are structured that, like, you may not have blacksmiths, but the idea of everyone in town all attempting the same construction project, or at least all being involved in some way, is baffling.
Right. It's not like they're delegating here. It's not like one guy is, like, bringing in wood. No, they're all trying individually to make these things, it sounds like.
That's the impression you're getting.
Okay.
Do you ask, like, what do you say in response?
I would say that this seems like a fascinating endeavor, and you all seem so very dedicated. I would love to see this process, if you would be inclined to share it.
There's a pause when you ask that. You can tell they still don't 100% trust you, and they're not really comfortable with your presence. But they kind of look, pass looks around and say, well... And finally, one steps forward, and she says, perhaps it would be appropriate and beneficial for you to see true magic being worked, or at least attempted. And she sort of humbly bows her head.
I would return the gesture and say that I would be quite honored to see what they consider true magic.
She nods and says, well, why don't you accompany us to the crafting ground? And she starts to turn and leave. And as she's turning, you see Nikolai rush forward and say, Nanette, surely you don't mean to bring this illusionist to the ground. And she says, all can learn. All may grow. We have learned so much. We have come so far. We have grown. We were once like this one here. Please, come. And as you're walking through this town, more and more people start to come out and like, oh. And like seeing that Nanette here is guiding you, more people are joining this crowd. And she says, do not worry. You will see. This is absolutely a work in progress, or rather, we are a work in progress. And we, as embarrassing as it may be to fail, it is a necessary part of success. So, do you have any questions?
I do. I noticed you have recently stopped taking to the sea.
Yes, yes. That was as deigned. It was as designed. We have recently... We've been suffering, I should say, at the whims of the sea. I'm sure that you, as part of the sea, you realize it is its own being, its own entity, almost its own god unto itself. We sail upon it. We try and draw fish from it. We must use it to live, but if it chooses, it could destroy us, whether through floods or storms or perhaps all of the fish decide to swim away, or perhaps other entities decide to slash our nets. No personal criticisms meant, of course. We all must live. But we recently were visited. Blessedly visited. In fact, perhaps rather than visited, I should say blessed. We were blessed by the arrival of an individual who has shown us another way.
The individual from the posters.
You saw. Oh, everyone. He saw. They worked. And people are like, oh, wonderful, wonderful.
Smatterings of applause.
There was a poster on every surface.
Yes.
When I walked in. Like, it was impossible to... Okay, gotcha.
Like, incoherent. Like, there were places where they were pounded in with nails, but the wood itself had rotted, was damp, and the poster was crumbling already. Like, the act of putting this up was madness.
All right. So I have seen the posters. Yes. Yes, I have. Yes. You picked some excellent vantage points. It was the first thing I noticed.
Excellent. It is the most important thing for any visitors to our humble village that they know about the teachings of Guerno.
So my cult ping is just bing, bing. Like, it is just going off like a siren right now. So I'm kind of eyeing the environment, you know, got fog cloud already on a trigger. Like, I am prepared to run if I have to, but I'm getting all the information I wanted. Like, this is perfect. So I am going to continue like everything's fine.
You start coming up to, it's the town square, effectively. But it almost seems filled. Imagine the entirety of the town square converted into a workshop where sails have been turned into just canopies. There are forges, there are little sort of carpentry stations. Various people in various places trying different attempts of construction.
Like they've turned the whole square into one work camp.
Yeah. People moving between stations, talking, consulting over, like, is this right? And things just being dropped. The little hopeful glint in someone's eye as he turns over and falls. It's like, no, absolutely not. It should be finer. It should be cleaner. It's like, no. And he doesn't even throw it out somewhere. It's just dropped and goes to begin again.
May I ask, who has done the best?
We don't like to choose favorites, but, Mariana has come the closest. Nanette motions over to a woman, we will say an elf woman, who is surrounded by half-finished spears that appear not to have been, like, discarded with quite the same fervor, but rather laid out. And you can see they laid out in such a way that you can see a development over time, that these each time these spears are becoming more refined. And I think that's one, that's the first thing you would notice. And then as you see this woman, she is staring almost like unblinkingly at the wood that she is working on and the different materials and metals that she, and it's like with such a precision and such an intense focus. She, you could guess that you could stand here probably for 3 hours and she would notice you were here.
What about Marianne gives away that this is not purely construction, that this is not like, she isn't doing this purely by, you know, chisel and hammer.
If you stand there long enough, you would notice that as much as she is working with tools, there are moments when she will pause. And as she's looking, she will reach a finger up, and you notice she is wearing gloves. She will reach sort of a gloved, almost like mittens. She'll reach a mitten up to her still unblinking eyes and wipe it across one of her open eyeballs, and then rub whatever was on her eye onto the spear, at which point she will slide in components together and they will stay affixed.
Roll me Arcana.
And I rolled an 18.
Jeremy, how complete an answer do you think that warrants?
With an 18, I would say it is, I would say, you know what? Let's go with percentages. What would that be? 90%? If we were saying a DC 20, then let's say this gets him 90% of the way. Or you can go, I would say between 70 and 90, I would think.
There are two aspects to this. One is that you are sufficiently attuned to magic to notice that something is going on. There is an additional thing in this that you cannot immediately perceive. It might even take like a casting on your part to determine what was just moved. But the thing you notice is when she does that, it is the only time where she blinks, and it seems frantic and purposeful. She is re-wetting her eye after having removed the tears.
I think I would notice that, and I would admire the handiwork, and I would mention that I'm not sure exactly what you are doing, but should your eyes need wetting, I can assist.
Mariana looks up, and I think now that you see her, for the first time you've seen elves before. I think you've glimpsed elves. Sometimes when ships wreck or someone drowns, an elf might sink down. And when they do still have their eyes intact, as well as just when you've been to the surface and have glimpsed them, you can see their eyes are not entirely dissimilar from yours. These do not look like normal elf eyes. They are round, they are bulbous. The pupils are entirely black. There is no iris. It's just black, staring directly at you. And they are uncomfortably large as well. Not just the eyeballs themselves, but the pupils and irises are just fill up an abnormal amount of eye. And she, like, it's as though she's been snapped out of a trance as she looks up and gazes at you and says,
I have quite enough liquid in my eyes, thank you.
You notice that her speech is slightly slurred. What's your passive insight?
My passive insight is 15.
Or perception.
My passive perception is 15. My passive insight is also 15. They're the same.
You notice that she has no teeth.
This is feeling very fish. Are the eyes looking like fish eyes?
No, this is absolutely too familiar for something on the surface.
Okay. I know that fish eyes work better underwater. I have a suggestion. If you're having at all trouble seeing your work, have you considered working underwater?
The word underwater, it's like a wave goes through everyone in that square. And they all start to like lean forward. Mariana turns her head and says,
say that again.
May I show you?
And they look back and forth.
Rom, I want to know how you're going to approach this.
I'm going to turn to a bowl of water, and I'm going to shape it. And I'm going to shape it into like lenses or like half bowls. And I can also use air bubble if I have to help me shape. Basically, I want to make her water glasses so she can look through water at what she is doing.
Rom, I want you to make me a wisdom save while you do this.
I have a wisdom saving throw of +5. 5 + 5 = 10.
It does exactly what you're intending.
Kaelesta.
Except the moment you start pulling on the water, it's more than you wanted. It's more than was in the bowl. You can feel your magic complemented, enhanced. And you encase her workspace in water.
I won't fight it. I'll just let it go. If it's something beyond me, I'll assume it's part of their ritual and part of whatever they're doing, so I won't fight it. I'll just let it happen, but I'll make sure that they can breathe by creating a bubble around their mouth.
You push for that, and you feel your magic push, and then magic reject your action.
I'll accept that.
And she breathes.
Didn't kill her. Okay. Well, that would have been a bad start.
Jeremy, not even necessarily in line of sight, but he notices. Wherever he happens to be in town, he's fully aware that this has started to occur. And you watch the way she's working. It becomes finer. She's more aware of it. She's more aware of what she's doing. And it's moving smoother.
Breathe slowly and steadily. All of my focus is just in maintaining this environment for them to work in.
And I'm going to have you roll the perception check here at disadvantage.
7 + 5 = 12.
Jeremy, whatever you have to say next, Aram is only like loosely aware of. You can narrate as much detail as you want for the audience. Aram, you are getting, like, the vaguest silhouette.
So sound carries better underwater, but I think a lot of times human voices and stuff can get pretty garbled.
Yeah.
Like, you can maybe be able to hear them, but you can't necessarily make out what they're saying. And I think that's kind of the effect right now, is this, whatever magic has fed into yours, it is though, as Mariana is submerged, it's as though you are being submerged in this presence, this magical presence. And so you can only vaguely hear the gasps of amazement. And you can hear people saying, she has begun the descent. She's begun her descent. Look, she's begun her descent. She can... And you, people like whispering, we must tell. We must tell Guerno. Someone go tell Guerno. And people like rushing off. And others saying, oh, would that I were wet as well. Would that I too could be wet. Would that I too could descend. And you see people crying and some of them grabbing other, like running, grabbing buckets of water and throwing them over themselves. Some people just putting their heads in buckets of water. You can see, like, the square, as much as it was a frenzy of work, now it is a frenzy of chaos, of voices crying out. But again, you barely register all this as you see Mariana, as in touch with her, what she was doing as she seemed before, now she is taken to it like a fish to water, pun fully intended.
Yes.
She is working with, like, a speed and fluidity and like an instinctiveness that even seems to surprise her at times, where she will slide something and her body will turn and move it in such a way that her, you see, she seems visibly surprised by. But as she does this, you can see the elements are coming together in a way that this doesn't look like some crappy spear. This actually looks pretty good. Now, maybe it's not fully capturing the impossibility. You know, as you turn your head, it doesn't quite have that same, like, whoa! But there's, like, you can, instead of flashes, you can now see, when you turn your head, it's not just a flash. You see, like, the impression of, like, oh, that is where the angel is. That's where the figures are, one man holding another. Like, this is becoming a truly multifaceted object in a way that you have never seen.
Aram, I want you to make me another wisdom save.
and that is a 19 plus 5 is 24.
Your magic is primal. And one of the things about that is it is adjacent to the divine. It isn't perfectly divine, but it's near to it. And you just manage to choke off as something grabs that facet of your connection and pulls through it. And you feel, I'll tell you this mechanically, but you feel the narrative of consequence of it. You feel something try to tear a spell slot out of you. Something is trying to take that little adjacency, that connection, and pull more power through it. And that is when you see dissatisfaction in Marianne's face, where she turns it and she realizes this was another attempt.
Okay, so I will very, very gently let the water down, and then I will just say, that seems like you've gotten even closer. I still don't fully understand what it is that you are doing, but perhaps the water that you've been avoiding is the answer the whole time.
Ram, I just want to let you know that once your focus comes back, one of the people who had, like, dunked their head into the bucket is still there, and they are absolutely still.
Oh, geez. Okay, so I will rush over to them and pull them out of the bucket. Are they breathing?
No.
Cure light once.
No.
They're just dead?
You don't know how long you were out. Like, you were tied into that effect. She crafted a spear from nearly just wood. And now you're standing there in this.
So they're just dead. How many people are dead? Is this just this one person?
You would have to actually take inventory, and this place is still madness.
Okay. Oh, dear. I need to find this person.
As you are, like, looking, you can see through the chaos of this crowd. Because some people start to, like, we must be submerged. We must go to the water. Go to the shore. And I think, Mariana, when you suggested, like, perhaps the water that you've been avoiding, she seems kind of torn. And, like, her body instinctively seems to, like, throw itself a little bit in the direction of the shoreline. And as people start to rush, you can hear others saying, no, he said we're not ready. And they're, like, fights are starting to break out. And sort of gliding over the top of this, you hear,
Friends, what is happening? What is this commotion? Calm down.
And this voice booms out in such a way that you, I think, as an undersea creature, something about it resonates with you in the same way that whale song does. This voice carries over, it not only carries over the noise of the crowd, it carries through the people. It's like being clicked inside out by a sperm whale.
You feel it in your chest.
Yes. And you know, as much as other voices can be distorted, this voice could speak perfectly clearly underwater.
Even as I'm listening, I would, like, with a little bit of the residual water I would still have, I would pool it in my ears to check the theory and be like, okay, this is something to do with my area. This is why I'm here.
And the crowd stops. The commotion ceases. As much as what when you had said underwater, that had sent a shockwave, this is like someone grabbed the cymbal. All the sound stops. You can see a figure who, I think the best way to describe them would be is if you were to take, what would be, do your people have any deities? Would you say that you have any sea deities that you worship?
There are three seas in this area. The ice sea to the north, the wider sea, which is just the blue, and then there is this very kind of temporal storm sea towards the south, and those would be the three entities. So this, like, kind of wide, kind of like almost a shepherd-like deity that everyone kind of follows, and then this more tempest deity that seeks power to the south, and this incredibly cold and distant deity to the north.
Roll me an arcana check as this person appears, because I think that you recognize the hold that this person seems to have as you said, not just of your place, but, like, magical
in nature.
Yeah.
That is a natural one.
With a natural one.
Fucking beautiful.
You cannot tell with which deity this person is affiliated, even if he is affiliated with any of the deities that you're familiar with. But there is something of the sea and divine about him. He looks as though if you could take a sea deity, something with the authority, but still retaining humanoid features, and take a sea deity and put it in a humanoid form. There's a regal bearing and yet sort of a calmness, the calmness of still waters, the kinds of waters that are so still that you might suspect something is about to come out. Sort of like the way that the tide recedes before a tsunami arrives. That there is a true well, there's a tsunami of power that this individual possesses.
What seems to be the problem?
You see that Nikolai, having been dragged out of a bucket of water by another individual who then shoved their own head in, lying sputtering on the ground, kicks the person in the bucket, kicks them so hard they sort of tumble, the water spills out, and they immediately rush off to try and refill. And he says, This sea dweller came among us and started doing, performing illusory magic, and then he points at Mariana. He says, she's descending. You see this individual who you know is absolutely Guerno look at Mariana and then look at you and say,
welcome. I am Guerno. What is your name?
I am Nivus, Guerno. Pleasure to meet you.
Nivus, well, welcome to our humble abode. I see that you've caught us as we are a work in progress. I hope that our showing has not been too mystifying here today, but as you can see, Mariana here has gotten closer than anyone else has yet to achieving the perfection that we seek.
I did notice that. I noticed several things about Mariana, including she seems to be transforming.
Yes, yes. The word we use is descending. You, as someone who lives in the sea, you recognize its fickle nature, you recognize its immense bounty, you recognize its power. What if you could affect the sea instead of the sea affecting you? What if the current did not direct you, but you could direct the currents?
Give me a religion check.
It seems a little bit, you know, heretical compared to, you know, because it's all right. So that is, well, that is a 19 plus 2 is 21.
The angels that you see in the spears are the angels of the gods of the sea. And the thing you keep seeing when someone is wielding the spear is the image of a man controlling the actions of an angel.
Like they're manipulating an angel?
Like the spear is becoming an angel, and then the angel is being wielded.
Okay, so here's the thing. If I was a land goer, all of this would feel bad. But I'm not. I'm someone who lives in the sea. So from my perspective, what I'm seeing is some sort of religious transcendence that is driving them toward the sea. And as a shepherd of the sea, it's not my duty to stop that. It's my duty to shepherd them to the sea, to help with the transition. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm like, okay, this is a little weird and a little different than I'm used to, but there doesn't seem to be anything malevolent about this. And while they seem to be a bit enthusiastic, I don't see any, like, they're not zombies. They have different abilities and different wills, and they seem to care about each other. So there's nothing for me to fight yet. I think I'm going to go along for right and be like, okay, listen, my friend, clearly this is a sensitive time for you all. As a shepherd of the sea, I have come here, I suppose,
to welcome you to your new home.
He steps forward and sort of half embraces you, like puts his hands on your arms and smiles and says,
"Let me ask you a question, Nivis. How deep does the sea go?"
That is a thing that my people have wondered often, because we cannot go to those depths. Those depths are for the others. They are for the large things, the deep things, but they are not for us. And I would think about that for a moment and kind of grin a little and say, "Well, you may consider this childish, but I have always been of the thought that there are some places where the sea has no bottom."
"Let's find out together."
And as he says this, you see, it's as though you are brought with him, submerged into that same feeling of magic. And as you feel yourself pulled down,
there's a moment as he's being pulled down where this fear hits him. And he remembers a time when he was over this trench. And he's always warned not to go near this trench. It's too deep. It's too dark. And he swam down once because his friends would all dare each other to swim down. And one time he swam a little too deep. And he was afraid. He remembers that fear. And that fear is what hits him right now. But he breathes in. He closes his eyes. And he pushes through that fear because this is too important.
When you breathe out, when your eyes open and you look at Guerno, they open just a little bit wider. Pupils just a little bit more dilated. And you see just a little bit more clearer than you ever did.
Thank you for joining us for the Kuatoa. For more information about us, notes for each episode, and ways you can help support the show, head over to killeverymonster.com.
If any of the ideas we've discussed on the show have sparked some of your own, tell us about it on Twitter at KEM Podcast. You'll find me at DJ Malenfant and Aram at Aram Vardian.
For ad-free episodes, early releases, bonus episodes, print-ready maps, our new audio DMs notes, and my character sheets for each encounter, head over to patreon.com/deadghostpro.
Our intro theme and many of the sound effects you hear in the show were created by BattleBards. Check them out at battlebards.com.
This episode was produced by Aram Vartian and Dylan Malenfant. I also did the editing. We were joined by Jeremy Cobb. You can find them on Twitter at JeremyCobb1. And if you are anything like me and all of that information just fell right out of your head, you'll find everything you need at killeverymonster.com.
And we'll see you next time
for Kill Every Monster.